Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 2, Prayers by the Demigods, Text 22. Saesha jivan khalu sampareto.
Saesha jivan khalu sampareto.
Vathete yojyanta nishamsitena.
Vathete yojyanta nishamsitena.
Dehe mitetam manuja sapanti.
Dehe mitetam manuja sapanti.
Ganthatamantam sanva. That jealous person, jivan,
while living.
Kalu,
even.
Sampareta,
is dead.
Vateta, continues to live.
Anyone who. Ajanta,
very much.
Nishamsitena,
by executing cruel activities.
Dehe,
when the body.
Mrite
is finished.
Come.
Manuja,
all human beings.
Shapanti,
condemned.
Gantha,
he will go.
Chava andam,
to hellish fire.
Tanumanina, of a person in the bodily concept, the concept of life.
Dhruvam,
without a doubt. Translation. A person who is very cruel is regarded as dead, even while living. For while he is living, or after his death, everyone condemns him. And after the death of a person in the bodily concept of life, he is undoubtedly transferred to the hell known as Anduttama. Purport. Kamsa considered that if he killed his sister, while living he would be condemned by everyone, and after death he would go to the darkest region of hellish life because of his cruelty. It is said that a cruel person, like a butcher, is advised not to live and not to die. While living, a cruel person creates a hellish condition for his next birth, and therefore he should not live. But he's also advised not to die, because after death he must go to the darkest region of hell. Thus, in either circumstance, he is condemned. Kamsa, therefore, having good sense about the science of the soul's transfiguration, deliberately refrained from killing Devaki. In this verse, the words Gantha Tanom Tung Tanumanina Dhruvam are very important and require extensive understanding. Srila Jiva Goswami, in his Vaishnava Toshini Tika, says Tatra Tanumanina Hapina Iti Dehatma Bhujaiva Papa Vinivesha Bhavati. One who lives in the bodily concept, thinking, I am his body, involves himself, by the very nature of his conception, in a life of sinful activities. Anyone living in such a conception is to be considered a candidate for hell. Andantagobhya Vishatam Tamishram Puna Puna Charvada Charvada. One who is in a bodily concept of life has no control over sense gratification. Such a person can do anything sinful.
To eat, drink, be merry, and enjoy a life of sense gratification, not knowing that the soul is transmigration from one body to another.
Such a person does whatever he likes, whatever he imagines, and therefore, being subject to the laws of nature, he suffers miserably again and again in different material bodies.
Yaha piyastava idam manovaya kama makamyena sharira mandha.
In the bodily constant life, a person is karma-nubandha, or conditioned by karma. And as long as the mind is absorbed in karma, one must accept the material body. Sharira-bandha, bondage to the material body, is a source of misery. Praise your God.
Nasadamanye yata-atmanuryam asandami-kvejita-ashadeya.
Although the body is temporary, it always gives one trouble in many ways. But human civilization is now unfortunately based on tanumani, the bodily concept of life, by which one thinks, I belong to this nation, I belong to this group, I belong to that group, and so on. Each of us has his own ideas, and we are becoming increasingly involved individually, socially, communally, and nationally, in the complexities of karma-nubandha, sinful activities. For the maintenance of the body, men are killing so many other bodies and becoming implicated in karma-nubandha. Therefore, Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī said that, tanumāni, those in the bodily concept of life are papi, sinful persons. For such sinful persons, the ultimate destination is the darkest region of hellish life. Anta tamon kam. In particular, a person who wants to maintain his body by killing animals is most sinful and cannot understand the value of spiritual life. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Tanam vishita ruran samsareshu narathala. Shipan, Ajisrama, Shupan, Ashari Shreva Yonga Shu, Ashari Yonga Apana, Uta Jangari Jangari, Mahapa Yanga Homteya, Tatoyant Yaralam Gajin. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, are cast by me into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. Attaining repeated birth among the species of demoniac life, such persons can never approach me. Gradually they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. A human being is meant to understand the value of human life, which is a boon obtained after many, many births. Therefore, one must free oneself from tanumani, the bodily concept of life, and realize the Supreme Personality of God.
Om Yen Chinananda Syakyananjana Chakra Chakshurumanitamdeva
Chasmai Shri Ravayama Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Gurudhananda Shri Ravayana Shri Vasari Gopakarinda
Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
We are continuing with the insight into the mind of the greatest murderer and terrorist, Kamsa. He's thinking, how cruel can one be? To his mind, there should be a limit. He's thinking, there's a line that I cannot cross in terms of cruelty. I have some scruples. If I become too cruel by killing Devaki and the child within her, people will despise me too much. It'll be too extreme. Everyone will condemn me while I'm living. They'll condemn me after I'm dead. And then there is such a thing as hell for such extremely cruel acts. In other words, Kamsa was making a discrimination between very abominable and most abominable. And he was deriving some
feeling of that he has some discrimination. No, this is too much, killing a pregnant woman. It's too much. It's going too far. I'll just wait till the child is born, then kill the child. This is a consistent thing. Killing a pregnant woman, that's going too far. That will destroy my reputation. I'll go to hell. People will condemn me while I'm living. They'll condemn me after I'm dead. That's too much. It's abominable, gross. Simply, I'll wait for the baby to be born. As soon as the baby's born, I'll kill the baby. Yes, this is crazy. And that is what happens when you're under the influence of the modes of material nature. You become crazy. Although you think you're quite sane. You notice how Kamsa thinks he's quite rational, and it all makes sense to him. Why kill a pregnant woman? Oh, that's too much. Better wait till the baby's born and kill the baby. Now, yesterday, Kamsa was talking about, what is my duty now? And we spoke yesterday how life puts us in very bewildering situations. What is my duty? In materialistic consciousness, you always consult your senses about what is your duty. Senses, what do you think? What's my duty in this situation? How can I please you? How can I serve the senses? And then you consult with other people who are also addicted to their senses. How long to go? How are your senses doing today? Tell me, how are you serving your senses? Maybe I need some tips from you. So in this way, there's a sangha, a satsangha, association of those dedicated to the body conception of life and temporary material existence. And they inspire each other. That, yes, there is such a thing as material happiness. Why do we have this concoction in our mind that there's such a thing as material happiness? Because of a satsanga. Because of association with those dedicated to material existence, we get this illusion implanted in our brain. There's such a thing as material happiness. Just like if I started talking about, have you seen the three-headed dog that's in the neighborhood? I tell Gopal Guru, I saw the three-headed dog walking on the street yesterday evening. It's really, really, it's a fact. And then he starts to believe, yes, yes, the three-headed dog. And he talks to Dhanda Karanya, did you hear about the three-headed dog? Everyone's seeing it. And I'm like, really? I haven't seen it, but it must be. Everyone is seeing it. And then Dhanda Karanya goes and tells his wife, Dhanda Karanya, you know, the whole world is talking about the three-headed dog. I mean, it's a fact.
Oh, really?
Let me call my girlfriend. Calls up.
Oh, Sudevi, did you hear about the three-headed dog?
No, I didn't know it. Tell me about it. Yes, everyone is talking about it. In this way, the reality becomes so intense that the three-headed dog exists. In the same way, the idea that material happiness exists is perpetuated by one person talking to another. I'm not happy. What can I do to be materially happy? Oh, you're material happy? And you're doing like this and that? Okay, let me also. And the parents, they try to shape their children. You must be materially happy. You must act in this way. Society's pressuring you. What to speak of turning on the television that will completely make you appear to only a mind. Your old friend, Budi Manta, I saw him in Delhi, and he was telling me how so many of the people in India he talks to, they really think that the USA is like what they see on television. They really think that. And they have in their mind that this is the standard. To just enjoy life with all the conveniences. As if everyone in the USA is just, you know, sitting around having a good time. No, they work so hard there.
The latest social statistics reveal that the average American works 4 more weeks a year than a European. A very dog-eat-dog competitive society. There's no social welfare, there's no benefit, no dole. Either you work and have money, or you're out on the street. That's the way it is. But the television tells you something else. Oh, Americans have so much time for laughing and joking, missing and batting, playing around with all their gadgets and electronic entertainment systems, home entertainment systems. They have so much time for just, you know, talking this, talking that. They have no time. So, what do you want to tell me? So many people in the in Delhi, they just watch American TV coming through the satellite now, and they think, oh, this is what they're doing over there. A life of lazy luxury where all the conveniences just fall out of the sky. There's so much time to talk and joke about trivialities. Oh, yes, this is the life we're hungry for. So television has that ability to convince you this illusion is real. You'll become much more peaceful in life when you understand there's no such thing as material happiness in the ultimate sense. It's a dream. It's a dream, that's all. It's a dream that agitates your mind, and your whole life becomes pushed out of shape because you're pursuing this mad dream. What is your duty now? Society tells you, your duty is to please yourself first. And then, to a much lesser degree, your duty is to please those who are your bodily relations. But even that's not so important now. The whole point of life today, as it lived, is to destroy everything except your relationship with your economics. Destroy the family, even destroy national ties. Everyone should be like a corporate clone, a servant of their company, a servant of their business enterprise. All the small businesses are being gobbled up. It used to be 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 70 years ago, 80 years ago, the small farm was the basis of society. That's all gone now. All the farms are big conglomerates. Some of them are owned by multinational agricultural companies. So the small farmers disappeared. Now the small business is disappearing. Everything is a huge multinational entity, and you are to seek employment with that entity and surrender your life. More important than your family life, more important certainly than your religious life, is your relationship with the corporation, with the economic entity. That is what is happening these days. And in this way, people are simply becoming serfs in a different way than the Middle Ages. Serfs, peasants, who have no other thought except how to please their senses right now. Never mind about the future. So that is what they see as their duty. Unless you have the strong association of strong devotees, you'll not be able to shake this monkey off your back. You'll not be able to free yourself from this crazy dream in your mind. Because everyone is talking about it. Everyone is so convinced. And here you are going the opposite way. You cannot last going the opposite way without the fortifications that bhakti yoga provides. It is impossible. We must take shelter of the holy name. We must take shelter of the association of sincere devotees. And of course, daily we bathe our intelligence in Srimad Bhagavatam. Then we can be safe. Now comes to say, what is my duty? He doesn't know. David, he's a woman. She's pregnant. She's my sister, too. These three things are preventing me from killing her. Woman, pregnant, and sister. Ordinarily, I'm easy to kill her. These things are three. Too much. One, all right. Two, maybe. Three. He's calculating my back.
shows you what's going on in this devilish mind. Shukadeva Swami revealing it so nicely. And he understands Krishna has no doubts about what he's doing. He says, the Supreme Lord, who knows his purpose. This is what's making him so fearful. Vishnu is unwavering. Vishnu is completely determined. His desires are always fulfilled. And what is his purpose? His purpose is to protect the devotees like Devaki and annihilate the miscreants like me. And Vishnu will not give up his prowess. Kamsa is convinced of the power of Vishnu, but he's a demon. Therefore, even though he knows about the power of Vishnu, he will not accept instruction from Vishnu. Instead, he has to attack Vishnu. Later in this chapter, you're going to read about how the demigods appear invisibly in the prison room of Devaki. Demigods like Brahma, Shiva, great sages like Narada, Vyas, they're all going to appear invisibly. They have that ability. And they're going to offer prayers to the Supreme Lord, who's within the womb of Devaki. What is the first thing they're going to say in these glorious prayers? Satya Vratam, Satya Param, Tri Satyam. They're going to say, my dear Lord, you are Satya Vrata. You are always true to your vow. You never fail in executing your vow. And what is that vow? To protect the devotees and to annihilate the miscreants. You always do that. Therefore, you're Satya Vrata. Your vow always remains and is never deviated. Kamsa knows that. When Krishna says, whenever and wherever there's a divine religion, I come, he does it. He either comes directly, he comes by his devotees, and he's come as the Krishna consciousness movement. Otherwise, who is going to teach this society how to actually live a human life? No one else is doing that. This is the only institution that's trying to do this mission impossible of teach people the value of the human body, obtained so rarely after countless births in other species. You finally get this chance as a human being. If you waste it, this is the greatest tragedy. I told you before how I was walking with Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles, and he began to explain what happens when you lose your human form of life and go down into the animal species. The Shastra gives the general idea. You go down into the animal species and then gradually you come back to the human form. Not just going round and round in samsara. The Prabhupada was giving the details. He explained that when you become a dog, your next life, that's not the end of it. You don't just become a dog once. You become every type of dog. You don't just become a pig once. You become every type of pig. This is the actual fine print of the laws of samsara. You don't become a chicken once. You become every type of chicken. This is why it's such a great tragedy to waste our human form of life. But whose parents, what schools, what society is teaching you, you have the rarest gift, the human form of life. Use it for its true potential. Become Krishna conscious. No, everyone is telling you, you have a human form of life, and it's all meant for economic development and sense gratification. How big is your widescreen TV? That's what it's all about. How fancy is your home entertainment system? In this way, people waste their life, and they must suffer because of this. Krishna is such a vrata. When he sees such a situation, mass wasting of the human potential, Krishna will act. And he has acted through the Krishna consciousness movement.
When you come to a proper Christian Baptist temple, you don't become immersed in just social dealings and mundane religiosity. You find out what the standard is. What is your duty? What is your purpose? And it's not in a fanatical way. Believe this. No. You get full knowledge. Just like, as you know, there are so many temples appearing in Melbourne. You can go there and receive very nice instruction on how to be a Hindu. But will you receive instruction on what to eat as it is in Srimad Bhagavatam? No. Your social life will be better. It'll be very nice, very easy. Worship anyone, Shiva, Durga, Vishnu, whoever, Ganesh. Just do some puja to someone. The main thing is to do puja. But not who you do it for, just the act of puja. Or anything, anyone who's pure of heart. And then, after a little puja, you talk about immigration, visas, job possibilities. Then you go. This is Dharma. Where will people go to actually understand what is Sanatana Dharma? Unless we teach them, how will they understand the truth? Therefore, a devotee's life is based on compassion. Just like if you see someone crossing the street and a car coming, you'll say something, look, look, move, get out of the way. Why don't we feel that way when we see the masses of people heading for animal birth? Srila Prabhupada also said that on this morning walk. A devotee asked him, what is the destination of most of the people born now? And Srila Prabhupada said, right now, most of the people on the planet will be heading for an animal birth. So unless they come in contact with a devotee, how will their course be changed? Krishna is Satyavrata. He's true to his vow. He's Satyapranam, the supreme absolute truth. In other words, Krishna is more truth than truth itself, because all truth emanates from Krishna. Sri Satyam, Krishna is true in all three phases of time, past, present, and future. What other truth do you know that does not change because time has changed? In this mundane world, something that's true today will not be true tomorrow. Something that's true yesterday will not be true today. The phases of time corrupt all so-called truth. Or you can look at Sri Satyam in another way, that Krishna is truth, no matter that there's creation, maintenance, and annihilation, the three phases of the cosmic manifestation. The same Supreme Absolute Truth remains unaffected by creation, maintenance, or annihilation, or past, present, and future. Those are the first words of the demigods, like Brahma, Shiva, the sages like Narada and Vyasa, in glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead, offering prayers invisibly in the room of Devaki, the prison room of Devaki. During the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Sankirtan movement was not simply an earthly affair. When Lord Chaitanya would tour South India, residents of other planets would come to visit him to take darshan in the form of human beings. Even Brahma, Shiva, they would come to see Lord Chaitanya in South India as he was touring, but they would take the form of a human being. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya actually delivered all three worlds, because the residents of other planets came to the Earth planet to see him, to take his darshan. This is the true universal scope of the Sankirtan mission. Now, we should pay attention to the hints that Srila Prabhupada gives us in purports about what we should really be thinking about deeply. If you approach his books in that way, you'll get so much benefit. He writes, in this verse,
The words Ganta Tamongam Tamanino Dhrumam are very important and require extensive understanding.
What's this then? Very important, requiring extensive understanding?
What can that be? You should think like that. Especially because you'll notice your material mind or materially influenced mind tells you, well, what's so important about, you know, I haven't seen anything extraordinarily important yet in this verse. It's the big deal. Very important and requiring extensive understanding.
By paying attention when Srila Prabhupada writes this, these things, you'll develop a clear sense of priority with your intelligence. He's teaching you how to think. One devotee was telling me how once Srila Prabhupada was in Germany and there was some problem situation. He wasn't in Germany, actually he was in India. And he was discussing a problem situation in Germany. So he called in his leading disciples there, presented the situation. And then Prabhupada would say, well, what do you think? And they would give their opinions, and then Prabhupada would say, this should be the solution. The next day he would call them in again to discuss the situation, and Prabhupada would give an opposite solution. The next day he'd call them in again to discuss the same situation, and give a third solution. Finally he explained to the devotees, I'm teaching you how to think. And then he went back to the first solution he gave. That's what we'll do. So similarly, if you pay attention to his purports, you'll find he's teaching you how to think. Constructing your powers of analysis so you understand what is important, what you should be deliberating upon. So the words, Ganta Tamongam Tanumanino Dhruva, he says are very important and require extensive understanding. So what is this point that requires extensive understanding? One who lives in the bodily concept, thinking, I am this body, involves himself by the very nature of this conception in a life of sinful activities. Anyone living in such a conception is to be considered a candidate for hell. This is a very important point that requires extensive understanding. Automatically, by your having the bodily concept of life, you must be in a life of sinful activities. Think about that. Because as soon as you think, I am this body, you're going to be propelled by the modes of material nature to commit sinful activities. Thinking, I am this body, leads to thinking, what should I do to please this body? And that always involves sinful activity. Spiritual activities they're the opposite of the bodily conception. As soon as you think of Krishna, you're thinking, how can I please Krishna's senses? And that doesn't involve sinful activity. As soon as you falsely think, I am this body, then immediately you start thinking, how to please the body? And that always involves sinful activity. Why? Because we're not the body. Therefore, to act as if you're the body is sinful. Now you might say, but what about a pious life? Maybe we're not all meant to be fully surrendered souls, but perhaps we can just live a nice life of piety. What do the Yamadutas say about that in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam? The Yamadutas explain that whether someone is acting piously or impiously, papa or punya, sooner or later we get everyone in this world. Our market share is everyone. We have a complete monopoly of anyone who's acting karmically. Not just those who are acting sinfully, also those who are acting piously now, they are future customers. Why is that? Because the way the material universe is constructed is that under the influence of the modes of nature, you'll be forced to act sinfully sooner or later. So the Yamaduta said, sooner or later we'll get you. Even if you're living piously now. Okay, maybe in this life, You escape our clutches, but the next life will get you. Because you're living under the modes of nature. And the modes are in constant flux. So, when you become victimized by passion and ignorance, we'll be there waiting. It's just a matter of time, in other words. We get everyone. Not just the impious people. We'll get the pious ones too, because under the influence of the modes of nature, the pious ones will sooner or later slip up. This is the Yamaduta's testimony. So much for your dream that, well, maybe I'm not fully immersed in Sanatana Dharma, but I'll live a pious life, a respectable life, and this way I'll be free from suffering. No, the Yamaduta is saying, we'll get you sooner or later. Maybe not today, but tomorrow. We'll be there. You're ours. Basically, the Yamadutas are saying, everyone in the material world is a candidate for us. Now, Yamaraj, later, in clarifying the situation, why Ajamila was not taken to hell, Yamaraj explains that the only ones who are exempted from the grip of the Yamadutas are those who practice chanting the holy name of the Lord. They're beyond piety and impiety. The Yamadutas don't go near them. But everyone else, sooner or later, it's just a matter of time. What is one lifetime? You may say, oh, this lifetime I'm so pious, the Yamadutas won't get it. But what is one short lifetime? Next life, you make one slip, do a simple activity, you have to see them, they're there. So therefore the Yamadutas say, we'll get everybody sooner or later. Everyone is our customer. This is the reality of material existence. Mm-hmm. Now, just think about this extensive understanding that we must have. As soon as I think I'm this body, by the very nature of that conception, I must involve myself in sinful activities. Therefore, anyone who thinks I am this body is considered a candidate for hell. As Prahlad Maharaj says, Adanta Gopiya Vishatam Tavishvam Puna Puna Chagata Chaganam. Sometimes we don't like to hear these things. Oh, why do we have to hear we're not the body? Why do we have to hear about this, the results of sinful life? Think how deep is our understanding. How much do we grasp the implications of the bodily concept of life? And what is our plan how to act like we're not the body? Okay, you may say, I'm tired of hearing we're not the body. I understand all that. But what is your plan to act as pure soul? That is Bhakti Yoga. What is your plan to demonstrate the activities of the spirit, soul, and perfection? Okay, you say, I know I'm not this body. I've studied Bhagavad Gita one time. I've heard the devotees always saying, you're not the body. You're not the body. We don't know all that. I want deeper knowledge. All right, you want deeper knowledge? Then please demonstrate your non-material activities. Demonstrate that you know how to act as spirit soul. That is the point. Then we can say that there is Krishna consciousness because you know how to act as you are. You know how to act as spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna. Where are those activities? Simply hovering on the edge. I know we're not the body. I know there's a God. Yes, I believe in Krishna. This will not give you sufficient protection from the three modes of material nature. We must actively absorb ourselves in spiritual activities. The nine processes of devotional service, Shravana, Kirtana, Vishnu, Smaran, Palasena, Archana, Mandana, Dasa, Sakyam, Atmanavedi. Then we're actually living a real life. So let us think about this point. That requires extensive understanding. One who lives in the bodily concept, thinking, I am this body, automatically involves himself, by the nature of that conception, in a life of sinful activities. We must take shelter of bhakti activities. We hold on to them tightly. We never let go of our bhakti activities. Yes, there can be problems in our life in terms of the mind and body. Sometimes there are problems getting along with other devotees. Sometimes there are institutional problems in the temple or in the organization. But we never let go of our spiritual activities in serving Krishna. Because those spiritual activities are the essence of spiritual life. If we can remember this point, we'll save ourselves a lot of trouble. We never let go of the holy name of Krishna. We never let go of bhakti activities. Through thick and thin, and through thin and thick, hold on tight to those activities, to the holy name. Understand that point, and your spiritual life will become very strong. It is the nature of this world, and there are setbacks. Krishna consciousness is a spiritual movement operating within the material world. So there are setbacks also. But the true devotees keep going. And that way, Krishna becomes pleased upon them. Sometimes you don't see the effects of your Krishna consciousness activities for quite some time. Look at the life of Srila Prabhupada, how he struggled in India with no progress. It took some time for something to happen. So then he went to the USA during the peak of the countercultural times. And so many young people came to Krishna consciousness. But when he went to India, everything was so slow. He would complain, why is this the land of Dharma? No one is taking to Krishna consciousness. It took some time. Now everyone complains the opposite. India is booming in Krishna consciousness. The USA is so slow. This is the nature of the material world. It's up and down. Krishna himself said this in Bhagavad Gita. Sakalena mahatana yoga nashta paranjama. Because of the time factor, things wear down. And then you have to revitalize the Krishna consciousness. This is the way it is in this world. So you can remain immune to the ravages of time if you cling tightly to the holy name and the bhakti activities. If you think you've understood enough that you're not the body, then let us see the immersion in spiritual activities. That is the point. Otherwise, you calculate like Kamsa. Well, I'm not that bad. Reminds me, one devotee told me, he or she, I can't remember who, was doing sankirtan in Auckland, New Zealand, and approached a person with a book. And the person immediately became defensive. No, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm not a saint, but I'm not the worst person. No, actually I'm quite all right. Let me prove it to you. Why am I quite all right? I don't abuse children, and I don't park in parking spaces meant for the handicapped. I park. That was the standard. Why do you think I need spiritual life? I mean, I'm doing okay. I don't abuse children. I don't park in spaces meant for the handicapped. Finish. Dharma. You had a standard. The Kamsa has his standard. Killing a pregnant woman? I would think about it, but I would never do such. But when the baby is born, then I'll kill the new baby. That's fair. This is what happens when your intelligence is inspired by Maya. You come up with so much devilish rationalization, especially blaming others. It's all that person's fault. So convenient, isn't it? Because of you, I'm going through this. It's so nice to blame someone else. Under the spell of Maya, it really gives you an imaginary feeling of satisfaction, doesn't it? You, because of you, I'm going through this. Never blame yourself. Oh. That's not good. Always blame someone else and get that feeling of, you know, confidence.
Yeah, you're the one. Because of you, I'm suffering.
You never look in the mirror.
This is Kamsa. He knows Krishna is Satyavraja. His purpose never fails. But he's afraid. The devotees are enlivened by Krishna's never failing his vow. And Kamsa, he's afraid. So we'll talk more about Kamsa's fear tomorrow. How actually he saw Krishna. His bhava was so intense. Even though it was wrong, still it was intense. And he saw Krishna. Although, of course, he's thinking Krishna is his enemy. Still, he saw Krishna through that constant meditation and fear. Oh no, what am I going to do? How am I going to kill Krishna? He can't be killed, but I must kill him, but he can't be killed. It's like, you know, when you have a computer and it locks up, you know, no matter what you do, nothing works. So Kamsa's brain is locked up like a computer. I have to kill Vishnu, but he can't be killed. I have to kill Vishnu, but he can't be killed. And that way, this is a bhava, and he's absorbed, and he actually sees Krishna. But he sees him as his enemy. So then the devotee wants that intense bhava. I must serve Krishna. I must please Krishna. And the devotee sees Krishna in that way with love. Buddha bhava samandata. With ecstatic love, the devotee understands that Krishna is the source of everything. The bhava of Kamsa is so great that Narada Muni, in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, he compliments the bhava of great demons like Kamsa, Hiranyakashipu, and so forth. I wish I could love Krishna as intensely as they hated Krishna. I want the strength of their bhava. So we'll speak about that tomorrow. All right, any questions?
Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada mentioned in the purport that animal killers are the most sinful and they can't understand spiritual values. What can we do for such people?
Unless they come across a devotee and get transcendental knowledge, how do they know what to do in life? Because right here in Australia, as Srila Prabhupada said, if you're on sankirtan and you place a book in someone's hand and they just take it and appreciate it. Not today. That appreciation is enough to give them a human form of life at the next birth. Are you thinking that when you're responding? You change their whole karmic structure because that appreciation is the beginning of shraddha, very subtle. But that subtle beginning of shraddha is enough to give them a human form of life, an expert. Just by that act of appreciation. Not today. They made a beginning. Krishna takes note. This is how revolutionary the Sankirtan movement is.
For someone who's a butcher, like as a profession, he was saying that they are the most sinful. Is it the same for them themselves, that they can't understand it all?
Why do you think that in spite of there being so much so-called religion in the world doesn't change? Because there need to be religions. Mm-hmm. That's why. Talking about God, there's a little glimmer of value. But no impact is actually made because of the animal slaughter. That is the problem. Just think about the activities devoid of all compassion. It's cruel. For the sake of my tongue, I'm going to eat this creature. You don't need it to live, but still you're going to do it because you're attached to the taste of the flesh. They don't like to think like that. That's why they come up with so many bogus health reasons why they should eat. Actually, they're simply addicted to the taste of flesh, fat, and blood. You have to spell it out like that sometimes. Then they, oh, no, 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 it's just... But that's actually what's going on. I was reading the statistics for, I think I told you, for spirulina. Everyone knows about spirulina? Yes. How, just the North Island of New Zealand grew spirulina, the whole world would have more than enough food. But people say, I don't want to eat spirulina. I want lamb, beef, chicken. That's the problem. Just the North Island of New Zealand could give all the world its required nutrition by growing spirulina. That's the problem. The tongue. Therefore, talking no tongue, which says of all the senses, the tongue is most difficult to control. Has it ever happened to you that you haven't? Of course, if you travel. If you're traveling for some days and you haven't had some good prasad, do you ever notice how wild your tongue gets? Yes, the tongue is actually the strongest sense. Devotees would argue from. No, not the tongue! It's the other one. That's the problem. The problem is, no, what you mean on time for is this? The tongue is always there. The problems start with the tongue. If you can utilize your tongue properly, you can control all your other senses. Yes?
You can be first. One is when you were telling about Srila Prabhupada's problem. Once he had established his tongue nicely, in spite of that, when in India they were saying that the ISKCON is spreading, they are like spies. So, how much devastation Prabhupada must be feeling in his heart that I am spreading, I am giving all the knowledge, and people of my own country are telling that the ISKCON devotees are spies.
Yes, it was like that then. Still Prabhupada went on, in spite of all these extraordinary events.
When you say to me, you know that Ganta, Tamo, Annam, Tamo, Manimo, Dhruvam, the demigods are telling this to the essential effect that the person who does this in bodily concept has to do this. And then they change the name.
As soon as you think you're out of the body, then you must commit simple activity. All right, if not today, then tomorrow. And then you rationalize it. Well, still, I'm a nice person. I'm not as bad as the other people. I don't abuse children. I don't park in space.
Problems, or is it a way of dealing with some of the problems sent over there?
You deal with it as best you can, and sometimes you just have to wait and depend on Krishna. But you don't let these problems deviate you from your execution of devotional service. You go on. You march on. You do the best you can, but sometimes at particular moments, because you're not the supreme controller, you can't solve everything. But you keep on going. You don't give up your vow to Jai Hare Krishna, to serve Krishna. This world is a problematic place. Sometimes it's a disappointing place. Hare Krishna, thank you very much.